So we're talking about a new respiratory disease that's just emerged, I guess, within the last year. So far, the case fatality rate is hovering around 50%, although it's up and down depending on the day. It results in severe respiratory infection that causes a syndrome called ARDS, or acute respiratory distress syndrome. Basically, the virus causes enough damage that your lungs are poorly or non-functional, and obviously if it's to such a limit that they're not functional and any supportive care isn't sufficient to make up for that, you know, that's what's leading to fatal outcomes.
And it's transmitted primarily how and in what part of the world?
All the cases have originated from the Middle East to date, except some secondary cases, let's say in the UK. All the initial primary cases originated somewhere out of the Middle East, most of them out of Saudi Arabia. Transmission is close contact between individuals, so there hasn't really been transmission when there's not close contact. So it's always been to family members or for example, people in a renal dialysis unit that are in contact with each other every couple days for hours at a time.
I don't know if I read or interpreted this correctly, but is it true that this was first identified September of last year? Is that right?
Correct, yeah, in one patient from Saudi Arabia.
It just strikes me as so odd. Again, knowing nothing about your field, I have this notion that science has basically known about most, if not all, the viruses, diseases, infections out there, even if we don't necessarily know how to defeat all of them.
No, there's actually, I guess, thousands of undiscovered viruses. I think there's an article out last week where they're proposing there's over 300,000, they think, unidentified viruses carried in mammals alone, based on some estimates and some mathematical modeling. So that shows or indicates that there's really a wide spectrum of viruses that we still don't know about. And of course, many of these aren't going to cause disease, but every now and then something's going to jump from natural host, where maybe there's not a lot of disease in that animal, to another host. For example, in this case, in humans, where we do see significant disease.
Oh, interesting. And this, again, resistant to traditional therapies.
So therapies for viral infections are always really complicated. A lot of the time, there's not very good therapy. So resistant maybe isn't the right word. It's not like the bacteria field where antibiotics are available for a lot of things. Broad-spectrum antivirals, for the most part, don't exist.
So then how did this problem, this case, end up at the Rocky Mountain Labs in Hamilton?
So we work on emerging viruses. That's kind of one of our fields of interest. So this is definitely an emerging virus. Our group's had experience before with different emerging flu viruses as well. Heinz worked back in Winnipeg on when SARS emerged 10 years ago. So it was kind of a natural fit when MERS emerged to jump in and see if we can provide some kind of assistance for global public health.
Now, using concepts and language that I and so many of our listeners can understand, wrap our arms around, how do you and your colleagues approach this? Where do you begin?
So one of the things that's always useful when you have a new virus is to have an animal model. Of course, there's lots you can do in cell culture, but for doing any further testing, you do need some sort of animal model. And that's something our group does a lot, is develop animal models and validate them. So that's what we did here. Initially, you always start with a small animal model. So us and other groups have attempted that first, of course. So other people have tried putting MERS into mice. Our groups have worked on hamsters. Other people have worked on ferrets. And unfortunately, none of these animals show any signs of disease or even infection. So that led us to trying something a little bigger. So we moved to the rhesus macaque model to see if we could establish an infection model there. And in fact, we can. And it actually does show disease as well.
Why in the macaques and not necessarily the smaller critters?
So in the rodents, it seems to be a receptor issue. The receptor for this virus is DPP4. And rodents do express this, but it appears that rodents and rodent tissues, their version of DPP4 is not efficiently bound by MERS, and therefore the virus doesn't get in and cause infection at all.
Maybe take this opportunity. Perhaps some of our listeners will say they have a real ethical problem with using animals in these studies and would ask, are there better alternatives than using animals?
So not really. So, of course, before we did treatment, we always look in vitro, so in cell culture, and that's what we did here. We established that the two drugs we used in the study, interferon and ribavirin, both had effects in cell culture. Normally, we would move to a small animal first and make sure we see efficacy there. It's very atypical for us to move into the non-human primates immediately following in vitro work, but given the lack of a small animal model, there really was no choice, and we felt the data was compelling enough and the situation for public health important enough that we made that jump.
Okay, so then again, what led you all to find out what worked and what did not work?
So interferon and ribavirin are both already identified as antiviral drugs. They're used in combination for hepatitis C quite widely. And it was previously reported that for SARS, both interferon and ribavirin arguably had some effect and that they did work better together. So we went basically with what you know. We expected that one or both of them would have some effect, and what we found is that together their effect was better than either separately. And this was from work in cell culture, and so we went ahead and tested the combination in non-human primates.
This is assuming a quick diagnosis. In other words, you know these primates were recently infected. How does this combination work in more advanced cases?
So that's going to be one of the difficulties, and something I think that we kind of make clear in our paper, and we've been telling people over and over and trying to reinforce that with any viral infection, if you wait till the patient is near death and you expect to go in with drugs that are antiviral, the chance of them being effective is really quite low or non-existent. Patients really need to be treated early. So you need good diagnostics, and then you would need the confidence to treat patients early in the course of disease and not wait till severe disease onset before you consider treatment. And I think that's the time when we would expect this combination to be the most effective.
And are doctors in that part of the world, are they learning more and more about this? Would they be more prepared to make quick diagnoses?
Diagnostics from a technology point of view, there's absolutely, I think, no real limitations there. Assays are extremely sensitive and specific. The problem is the specimens that need to be collected. You require, really it seems, a lower respiratory tract specimen instead of an upper respiratory tract specimen. And that's a little bit more complicated to obtain and a lot more invasive. So if you have a person walking into your office with just flu-like symptoms, likely you're not going to be taking a lower respiratory tract sample. That's only going to come later on when they get more ill and don't respond to the first go-to antibiotics.
In the lower system, when you said invasive, does that mean surgery or something else?
Not surgery, but taking like a bronchial sample, so needing to do like a tracheal wash. So inserting a tube down the trachea and just doing a wash with fluid. And of course, that also puts the people doing the procedure at a little bit more risk than, say, doing a throat swab.
Okay, so you and your team cracked this nut. What now? Are these drugs being used in real cases or not quite there yet?
Reports in the media have indicated that they have used interferon and ribavirin in some cases. Most of the people, they've used it very late in their disease process, and they've indicated that that really hasn't been that successful. And again, to myself, that's really not that surprising. People need to be treated early in the course of infection, not one or two days before they die, unfortunately. That's just too late. And so that decision needs to be made a little earlier. One of the complicating factors is both these drugs do have significant or serious side effects that need to be accounted for, and there needs to be a balance between, you know, the risk of using these drugs and the risk of developing serious MERS disease, which is occurring because you have to look at a 50% case fatality rate at the moment.
What are some potential side effects?
The side effect profile, at least, is very well defined for these drugs because they are used frequently and in a large population. Ribavirin causes hemolytic anemia. It's reversible, though, so once you stop taking the drug, you do recover from that. And, of course, that's manageable during the clinical course. And most of these people are in hospital facilities that definitely have the ability to manage these problems. Interferon causes some immune suppression and bone marrow suppression. They also have some unpleasant side effects. Interferon induces fever temporarily following administration. It's possible that you get other local reactions to it as well. But again, the side effect profiles for both these drugs are quite well defined, and people who use them regularly are aware of what those side effects would be and how to deal with them.
It took 1 year to crack this case. Why so fast?
I guess a bunch of things fell into place rather quickly. So shortly after receiving the virus here, I guess to go back even further, once a physician in Saudi Arabia identified that they had something unusual in this person, they partnered with some other labs who were able to identify the virus quite quickly and determine the full sequence and diagnostics, again, in short order. And then people started working on animal models. Our group just happened to come up with the right animal model rather quickly, and then we work on treatments for other viral diseases. So knowing what there was pre-existing with SARS, it made sense to go to this drug combination. And so, yeah, in this case, things did move along fairly quickly. I mean, this is not an optimal treatment yet, but it's definitely something that could be tried.
Should we be surprised, I guess, lastly, Daryl, that this important work is being done at the little lab right here in Western Montana?
No, I don't think you should be surprised. I think a lot of important work actually goes on here at, and I wouldn't say it's that little either. I guess there's 450 people that work here who are, you know, very dedicated to their fields of research. So I think a lot of important work comes out of this little area in Hamilton, Montana. No, I don't think that's surprising at all.
Daryl Falzarano, listen, I very much appreciate your time and congratulations again.
All right, thank you.